Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of Now Hear This, Canby. I'm James Walton. I'm here to read the news. Let's get started. Governor Kate Brown has unveiled the details of her latest statewide mask orders requiring Oregonians age 5 and older to wear face coverings indoors starting Friday, regardless of their vaccination status. The governor is also strongly encouraging residents to wear masks in crowded outdoor settings, but not requiring it. The sequel is rarely as good as the original, and we'll see if the adage holds true when The Masked Face 2 Revenge of the Unvaccinated hits theaters and all other indoor public spaces in Oregon later this week. Brown also announced this week the sweeping new measures of requiring hundreds of thousands of state government employees to get vaccinated by as early as mid-October. The requirement extends to almost all state employees except those working for the legislature and the state court system. It does not apply to workers in city and county governments and special districts. Affected employees will be required to show proof of vaccination on or before October 18th or 6 weeks after a COVID-19 vaccine receives full approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, whichever is later. Individuals unable to be vaccinated due to disability or a sincerely held religious belief may be able to qualify for an exception as required by state and federal law. State government employees, however, will not have the option of weekly testing that is being offered to Oregon's healthcare workers who decline the jab. Vaccines are safe and effective, and they are the surest way to prevent Oregonians from ending up in intensive care units, said Brown. The only way we can stop the spread of COVID-19 for good is through vaccination. It was barely a month ago that Brown lifted the statewide mask mandate and other business restrictions, vowing that they would never return. New infections are up 800% since then, from a daily average of 110 a month ago to nearly 1,300 on Tuesday. Hospitalizations have increased sixfold, Brown said, reaching an all-time pandemic high of 635 patients on Tuesday. The sweeping measures followed new projections from the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Health and Science University that suggested COVID-19 hospitalizations are on track to far exceed the state's health system capacity within the next month. According to modeling from OHSU, without these additional mitigation measures, Oregon could be as many as 500 beds short of what will be needed to treat patients hospitalized for any reason by September. Cases are rapidly rising, and the current forecast predicts that Oregon will have more than 1,000 hospitalized COVID-19 patients by Labor Day, OHSU officials said in a statement. This is the worst-case scenario that Oregonians worked so hard to avoid in March of 2020. Oregon's situation is compounded by the fact that the state has the fewest number of available hospital beds per capita than anywhere else in the country. Oregon hospitals are also grappling with severe staff burnout and workforce shortages. Brown said the spike consists, quote, overwhelmingly of unvaccinated individuals and is quickly exceeding the darkest days of our winter surge. When our hospitals are full, there will be no room for additional patients needing care, whether for COVID-19, a heart attack or stroke, a car collision, or a variety of other emergency situations, the governor said. If our hospitals run out of staffed beds, all Oregonians will be at risk. Oregon was the 47th state, tied with Washington, to fully reopen its economy and lift the mask mandate in most places, and is now only the third to again require universal masking indoors, behind Louisiana and Hawaii. Washington, D.C. has also reinstated its mask mandate, as have several large cities. On the other side of the coin, two states led by Republican governors, Texas and Florida, have barred mask mandates statewide, though some local leaders plan to impose them anyway. A 40-year-old man already facing trial for numerous rape and sexual abuse charges was arrested in Canby on Friday after police found him in the presence of a minor female during a routine traffic stop. Vitaly Yasinski was previously arrested on June 10th by the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office on 4 counts of third-degree rape, 5 counts of third-degree sexual abuse, 4 counts of third-degree sodomy, 7 counts of online sexual corruption of a child, and 6 counts of prostitution. Yasinski posted bail and was not in custody Friday, August 6th, when Canby police stopped him for a traffic violation. He had an underage female in the car with him at the time of the traffic stop, authorities said. Concerned for the girl's safety, the Canby officer contacted detectives from the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office Adult Sex Crimes Unit, who responded to the scene to assist with the investigation. Yasinski was subsequently arrested on a new charge of third-degree sex abuse. While both investigations are continuing, authorities believe Yasinski could have had more victims. He allegedly used Snapchat to talk with and lure children. Anyone with information about Yasinski's criminal activity is urged to contact Detective Kaiser at 503-655-8211. With temperatures again predicted to creep into territory more reminiscent of Death Valley than the Willamette Valley, cooling centers have reopened across the region and first responders are warning residents to be on the lookout for symptoms of dehydration and heat stroke. Highs are predicted to be in the triple digits from Wednesday through Friday, with a peak of 106 currently forecasted for Thursday. Governor Kate Brown took the action this week of declaring a preemptive emergency, saying the multiple days of extreme heat with little or no cooling overnight pose serious health risks for residents and vulnerable populations. It may also impact critical infrastructure, causing utility outages and transportation disruptions. Oregon is facing yet another extreme heat wave, and it is critical that every level of government has the resources they need to help keep Oregonians safe and healthy, said Brown. I encourage Oregonians to take proactive steps to keep themselves and their families safe, including drinking plenty of fluids, taking advantage of cooling centers, and checking in on neighbors, friends, and loved ones. Heat-related illnesses are preventable, and all Oregonians are encouraged to learn the symptoms of heat stroke, heat exhaustion, and other heat-related illnesses. Oregonians who do not have air conditioning in their homes are strongly encouraged to make a plan today to find a cool location they can access during the heat wave. Residents are also asked to check in on vulnerable friends, family, and neighbors who may be susceptible to extreme heat. In Canby, cooling centers will be open at the Canby Adult Center, Canby Public Library, Zor Lutheran Church, and Denny's. The Oregon heat wave of late June was not only historic, it was also deadly. An estimated 115 deaths were attributed to the extreme heat event, in which temperatures reached upwards of 118 degrees in some places, including 12 deaths in Clackamas County. Portland General Electric has been preparing its grid for high electricity demand this week, officials said. PGE is actively monitoring the weather and preparing its system to perform, including using high-tech infrared monitoring of distribution operations that can point to potential problems before they occur. Extra cooling systems are on standby, ready to be activated on essential distribution equipment. Still, PGE encourages customers to be prepared for the high heat and potential power outages. For tips on making an outage kit, staying safe and cool, and food safety tips, visit portlandgeneral.com/extreme-heat. A Malala man died in a crash on Highway 213 near Clackamas Community College in Oregon City Friday afternoon, according to Oregon State Police. Troopers responded to the crash near Douglas Loop at 3:34 p.m. According to an initial investigation, Kyle Hansen, 45, was driving north on Cascade Highway when he left the roadway, continued through a grassy shoulder, and crashed into a brick wall. Hansen suffered unspecified fatal injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene. OSP said there was little impact on traffic. Investigators did not indicate what factors may have contributed to the crash. OSP was assisted by Clackamas Fire, the Clackamas Medical Examiner's Office, Oregon City Police Department, and the Oregon Department of Transportation. After nearly 2 years without a major community parade, the last one on record being Light Up the Night in December 2019, the tradition will return in fine fashion with the Canby Kiwanis Kitty Capers Parade on August 17th. The youngster-led parade has been the traditional kickoff of the Clackamas County Fair since at least 1948 and possibly even earlier, interrupted only by COVID-19 in 2020. Along with the fair itself, the parade is back this year, and organizers are hoping children from all over Clackamas County will participate with their families. Canby Kiwanis encourages kids to dress in costume and walk or ride a decorated bike, or for families and neighborhoods to create their own decorated floats, said parade chair Luana Hill. It's a sweet, old-fashioned parade. Children are especially encouraged to dress and decorate with this year's fair theme in mind, Back in the Saddle. Kiwanis awards first, second, and third place ribbons, and in some categories, cash prizes for participants. All participating kiddos receive ribbons, and they and an accompanying adult will net a free ticket for entry into the fair while supplies last. Luana Hill told the Canby Current Kiwanis reserves about 1,400 tickets each year, and they usually run out. The tickets will be good until 1 p.m. on August 17th. Registration begins at 8 a.m. Tuesday at the corner of Northwest 5th and North 1st Street in Canby near Knight and Eccles Schools. Registration is required in order to participate. All entries should be in their category area by 9 a.m. when judging begins. The parade steps off at 10 a.m. and arrives to open the fair before 11 a.m. A parent or guardian must sign for their child. For convenience, large groups may want to print the registration form from the Canby Kiwanis website and fill it out in advance. Major construction is going on at Knight and Eccles Elementary Schools, where the parade starts. This year, the playgrounds are not accessible, and registration tables will be in the street. Canby Kiwanis will also be hosting its traditional bike decorating event from 3 to 5 p.m. on August 16th in Wade Park. Kids can bring their bikes to decorate at no cost. Kiwanis is unable to provide overnight storage this year due to the school construction project, so participants will need to take decorated bikes home overnight. There will be lots of flower streamers and fun one-of-a-kind items to make for a festive parade. We in Kiwanis are hoping to have our biggest turnout in years, Hill said. We sense a lot of enthusiasm for fun things to do with kids, and the fair always offers a great family experience. For details and registration forms, you can visit Canby Kiwanis, that's K-I-W-A-N-I-S.org. And that'll do it for this edition of the news on the Canby Now podcast. I'm James Walton. As always, thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Hey, James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he... I even know what to get.
Look, I'm gonna make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Canby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons & Dragons camp, led by Canby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by anytime and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Canby or online at booknookcanby.com.
Okay, well, it is a beautiful day, and we are so excited to be here at Swan Island Dahlias, the largest dahlia farm on planet Earth and one of the most beautiful places planet Earth. Here with Nicholas Gitz and Heather Schlow, Dahlia Masters Extraordinaire. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Staying busy.
Very busy. Busy is the right word.
Normally. It's a different, unique experience changing from a 6-day festival to a 2-month festival.
Right. Which we are in the midst of now. So we're in the second week of the Dahlia Fields being open to the public. How's it been going? Obviously, we got folks out here now. Has it been pretty busy? Have people been eager to come see what's going on?
Yeah, more than we expected.
It's been really
wonderful. Yeah. Opening day last Sunday was very busy on the 1st, and it's just kept up the pace every day.
Yeah.
So flowers are a little behind because of the heat we had in July.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's pushed the flowers. Our color isn't the same at this point that we normally would see, but it's just been a hard growing year.
Right.
We'll
right.
catch up, but right. it just needs a little more time.
Like your dad said, we're going for a longer festival this year anyway, so that kind of works out.
It
right?
works out well.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll hang in there until later in September.
So. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, obviously last year and this year, the festival kind of changed because of COVID and some of the restrictions and just early on when a lot of the planning would need to happen, just really having no idea what things were going to look like or what you had to do. But I'm just curious how it feels as the owners and the growers here to be able to offer this back to the public again, to see people out here enjoying it, you know, in line with the guidelines and everything, maybe not the way that they're necessarily used to with the previous festival, but just to see people out here enjoying it.
Yeah, well, last year we opened, but only did the field and really kind of
didn't
promote anything, trying to keep it under control.
Yeah.
And, you know, for her, she has to really basically plan the whole festival, all the florists, all the supplies for the indoor show and all that stuff.
I know having to put the little masks on all the flowers. That was tough. That was hard.
So she had to make the decision, like in May, whether we were going to run it or not. You know, and at that time, things were getting a little better. Okay, maybe we should have. And then all of a sudden now, it's like, glad we didn't try to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
There's too many people involved, too much money in supplies, too many vendors. It's just the staff.
Yeah.
We just couldn't guarantee we were going to open. And, you know, where we sit today, I don't know what next week looks like.
Right.
And I think we made the best decision we could with the information we had in May, which was to go no indoor.
Yeah. That's a tough decision. I hope people realize how hard that is.
And
you said, the money involved.
The sleepless nights of which way do we go.
Yeah.
But being that it's a free event
and
we have usually about 40,000 people in 6 days, we just couldn't put ourselves in the place or put our customers in the place or the staff in the place of having an outbreak. So we felt like we were much better off this year to say, May we weren't open. We technically couldn't do it.
Right.
Will we be open? Don't know. Yes, we're open now, but I feel like we've made the best choice.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like we're on day 8 or something now, and I'm thinking, well, we only have 50 to 60 days of this. Instead of a 6-day or 2-weekend festival, now we have 2-month festival.
Yeah.
So
it's been good, though. It's been exciting.
It's good. You know, everybody in the world right now is limited staff. I mean, you can't find enough workers, so we've...
Right.
At least we're able to get enough young kids, teenagers, to help park, and they're working their way into knowing what they're doing, a pretty good job.
Yeah.
But it's just like for us, it's like, man, you know, every day. And Wednesdays it's supposed to be, we're closed from field maintenance,
is
when I do a lot of spraying and things, so normally Wednesdays, I'm here anyway.
So there are no
not
days
a day off.
Off
for this.
No, there's no day off. There's too much to do.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just got a call. Just when I was 15 minutes ago I have a new tractor, a new sprayer system that's been being built in Mount Angel, and it'll be here tomorrow.
Wow.
So on my day off, we'll get the new sprayer.
There's always something. That is our field maintenance day.
Quote-unquote day off. Yeah.
So it is weird. I mean, we are closed Wednesdays, and I think that's really important for people to understand. It gives us one day to do some things that we can't do when public are here for their safety.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, you grew up in the farming business on this farm specifically. Heather, you did as well, but Nick has a few years on you.
Just a few.
Just curious, you know, what this experience has been like in kind of the realm of your experience. Have you experienced things like this in terms of the farming business before in your life?
Well, you know, I think for anybody that kind of grows up maybe in a family business or what your parents have done and things, you have a tendency to go, I'm not doing this. I'm going to do something else, you know. So, you know, I went to school, actually business major and into accounting and things like that, and thought maybe I would be out of there, but the way things evolved,
they pulled you back in.
they pulled me back in.
Yeah, I've seen The Godfather.
So I ended up since 1975 I've been here on the farm after college and things, and then Heather went off to teach, and then they got caught up in the cutbacks of schools that losing teachers or cutting teachers, so she came back, and I'm so thankful and so lucky that she did, even though she pushes me harder and harder and harder.
Right.
And makes things busier and busier and busier, which is great for the business. So it's nice to have
I have big dreams.
Yeah. Make some new stuff like this.
You know, thinking outside the box, we're so used to what we do every year, and this pushed all of us to see what we can do, you know?
Right. So. Well, speaking of that, and you've made that phrase frequently in a previous interview we did as well, with the pandemic forcing everyone to think outside the box and do different things. Like you mentioned, Nick, last year it was just the fields are open. They're here. You know, we can't stop. We can't lay off the flowers. They're here.
Right.
So just, you know, follow the guidelines. Be safe. But we're not doing any extra frills. This year, again, we're stretching out the festival, but are adding some extra stuff. So tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So every Friday during August and September, we're adding a farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been close to 40 vendors. Absolutely a great selection of products and things. So I'm really excited.
Yeah.
And then we've got some different painting art classes going on, different artists. We've partnered up with Artomatic, which is in Canby, the art gallery, and gotten some of their artists to put on classes.
Yeah.
We have Board and Brush out of Portland that's going to come and do sign making for people just to stop in. That one you don't even have to pre-register for. There's yoga. There's a flower arranging class that I'm going to teach. Yeah, they did yoga last night here. It was awesome.
How's that going?
It was beautiful. It was after hours, so it's quiet and peaceful.
What's the Dahlia pose look like? Is it like...
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't get to take the class.
Okay.
I wish I did. Still in work mode.
Okay, gotcha.
And then we're having rotating food carts. Mm. So every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there's usually a food cart here along with the pint-sized pub, which is... mimosas and beer and cider.
Awesome.
It's really awesome. And then we have six concerts that are going to go on that are free during the day. They play noon to 4 on six different days.
Yeah.
And you can come enjoy the flowers, enjoy the music,
cool.
enjoy some food and relax. So
awesome.
Gives people just an opportunity. You know, some are flower enthusiasts and maybe their husband or wife or partner or not, and they can come and enjoy also. So it really opens up the spectrum for more people just to get out, be outside, be safe, look at what Mother Nature gives us and enjoy.
You've got the picnic tables out here, some shade, you got your classroom set up over there. Just a great setup for all that stuff. It's really nice, and obviously the very beautiful backdrop. So.
And every day it gets a little more color and a little more color, so what we see today will be much prettier every day as we go into September.
Yeah,
and
only
August.
Gets better.
Yeah.
The late bloom has caused a little bit of stress on trying to fill cut flower orders, but today is a huge day, and they've, I don't know how many white, 150 dozen white or something.
White,
it's crazy.
Must be a big wedding weekend. White dahlias are in high demand
it's a
this
big
weekend.
Wedding
so,
summer
yeah.
this year, yeah.
A lot of weddings. That
and
postponed.
A lot of weddings last year got postponed, and now they're coming back, so the demand for the flowers is up. And
So
we're just excited. We have a beautiful gift shop with hundreds of treasures that people can enjoy. You can get cut flowers while you're here to take home. You can pick out your dahlias that you want to order. We are doing a special through the end of September that if you order your Dahlia Tubers online, you get 10% off.
Nice.
So it allows people to go home, take their list after they've been here, and figure out exactly what they want to order and not be pressured to do it while they're here.
Yeah.
And you could bring a picnic or you could eat from one of the food carts.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing to do is to check out our website at dahlias.com and then check out the events and look at the schedule and pick your day that you want to come or days. A lot of people are going to come now, are going to come in another month and rotate around. So I think, you know, there's different food carts, different events, different classes. Some of them take pre-registration, so you definitely want to make sure you peek at those. But I think there's just a wide variety for a lot of different people.
One thing I'm not sure you mentioned was the classes that you guys are doing.
Yeah.
So if you are looking for someone that might know a thing or two about how to arrange flowers or how to care for dahlias, these are a couple of people. You'd be hard-pressed to find people that know more. So,
we have a free dahlia culture seminar where Dad and I will visit and share all of our knowledge about growing dahlias and take people's questions. And so that is free and you can pre-register to be in a raffle.
Yeah.
Otherwise you can just show up.
Right.
And there are three of those throughout August and September. And then I am doing 4 flower arranging classes. And normally during our traditional festival we've had before, I have always put on an arranging class, but it's just me up there arranging, showing.
Right.
Now we're going to do hands-on where everybody gets to do it and take home arrangements. So we'll do 2 arrangements in each class. and I get to share my tips and tricks. Awesome.
And those are happening in August and September.
They are. Yeah, there's four of them. Yeah. So there's a Thursday and a Saturday and a Thursday and a Sunday. Yeah. So
very cool.
We're going to give people some hands-on.
There are two ways to get the kind of knowledge that you guys have. Spend your entire life working on a 40-acre dahlia farm or just come to one of your classes. So you can pick whichever one you want.
Whichever
but
one.
But maybe the second one might be a little easier for most folks. So during the normal Dahlia Festival, what are we looking at for attendance? It's huge, right? Doesn't it draw
in the past or this year? So in the past, we looked at those 6 days at about 40,000 people.
Right.
And it's free. It's free parking. It's free admission, and we hope to keep it that way.
Yeah.
And it'll stay that way now that we've extended it. Same thing every day. So now we are hoping to just spread the people out over 2 months, not make people have to show up on those 6 days.
Right,
so it's a little safer, less crowd.
Yeah, and maybe get more, you would think.
Yeah,
stretching
it overall, out. Potentially, like, why overall, wouldn't you?
I think we have, we have some really disappointed people that without the 15,000 blooms
indoors.
Well, they
just want things to come back to normal. Yeah. I get that. So
And we've did it for over 70 years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's not here anymore. Right. So people that expect it, that just enjoy to walk through.
Yeah.
But the amount of florists it takes to put on, the amount of staff, amount of time, product, and then to try and control the crowds.
Risk.
And we just didn't want to do it. And being indoors, it's not something we can put on outdoors because of the heat and the flowers. Setting up the environment.
It would be definitely dangerous to try to do it. I mean, it's so almost shoulder to shoulder in that showroom. It gets so packed and stuff, and it just would not be a safe environment nowadays. Yeah.
And whether you agree with the pandemic or not, we had to make a business decision, and we have to follow the restrictions that are put in place by our state.
Right.
Like them or not, that's not what it's about. It's about doing what we are given and doing the best we can in that situation.
Right,
so.
Don't always have the luxury of just, well, this is what I think.
Right.
So. I totally get that. But it draws people from all over the country, the world, right?
More people, I think, come from out of state and across the
country,
U.S.,
out
of country, than even local. It's funny how it
even
works.
Now during the pandemic, I think I've seen some folks that are...
I visited with a family that was here from Arkansas yesterday, a family that was from Utah yesterday.
The license plates are amazing in the parking lot.
Yeah, it's fun to view, just to see where everybody's coming from. But I visit with more people out of state, which is exciting.
Yeah.
But kind of sometimes I'm always shocked of how many people in Canby don't even know that we're here.
Right.
Or that you could just come out here and have lunch, or you could bike ride out here, or come shop,
What kind of things do those folks say, especially now, is this like a family tradition for them, I imagine, and they're so excited to be back here?
They're so excited. A lot of them are growers that maybe have purchased from us for years and thought, I'm out in Oregon, I've got to go see. Now I want to see where it comes from.
Right.
And because we only sell the product we grow, we're not buying in product and selling product. So what they see is what they get. And there are a lot of growers that buy in product and resell that. So we are a little unique in that we truly are farming the product, and everything gets dug every year. Everything starts over. That's the product you're purchasing is in the ground. So it's got to be dug and harvested.
So many people, if they're out here for the first time, they all wonder, do you dig these? I have to dig those to sell them.
We don't have products sitting in the warehouse.
You dig all that? Yes, we dig all that. And it just blows them away that we have to dig that every year. But that's just, you plant one and you get back three or four, it multiplies, and you have to do a lot of handwork to get them there. But that's where our crop is and what we ship.
So
and a lot of people right now, they don't even understand, because there's so many bulbs, tulips, daffodils, different things that are planted in the fall.
Right.
So they're all coming out here thinking, can I get some today and go home and plant? In October, we're going, no. Dahlias, you plant in May,
And
it's like, oh, really?
They're like a potato. They're not a bulb. They can't take the freeze.
They all want to go home with something.
Product.
Of course, this year, she keeps expandability. Right,
yes.
Last year, we did 200 potted dahlias.
Yeah.
And we sold out in like 2 weeks. So this year she said, Dad, I want to do 1,200. So I did 800.
He allowed me to do 800.
And people are coming out, and right now they think there's one pot over there.
There's one left.
And people go, oh, this is your special of the day. I go, no. Actually, we started selling them in June, and it was 800 pots, and they're gone. And they're going,
and they're not
really
sold to garden centers or anything. It's just something we had here. We had 40 varieties.
Yeah.
and a nice selection of sizes and colors and everything, and they have sold rapidly. So that started in June.
Did Nick just admit that he was wrong? Do I need to take down that date real quick?
And it's something that the farm did years ago, and it wasn't really...
A farm stand.
Yeah, yeah, really. And I think the farm has taken off with so many visitors now, and people want to take something home.
Yeah.
So they're here. They're like, I want a plant. I want to grow it at home. I want it blooming now.
Yeah.
And so they want to take a potted dahlia home. And so I think, you know, next year we might get more.
Back on that, I have to admit I'm wrong a lot.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Every day we put this cut flower. You want to cut 100 bunches today? No. 300. I go, really?
Yeah.
And then we run out at 2 in the afternoon. We're out there scrambling to cut more. So.
We're going through, in our cut flower stand, the self-serve, that's we go through probably 400 to 500 bunches a day.
Wow, that's
and
amazing.
So it's just people could come and buy. Yeah. There is special orders people can do
that's
for events and stuff.
It is insane.
So yeah. I think, it, you know.
Everybody just walks out of here with
flowers.
And it's wonderful. Sure. It gives people, I think right now it's about... spreading joy, having a happy house. A lot of people are still home.
Sure.
We've heard a little bit of complaints from the florist world and the...
We can't keep up with the orders.
And we also are too cheap. But we are direct to farm. I mean, you are getting it right here. But the wholesale price is more expensive than the direct farm price. And so sometimes we hear a little feedback of grumping that we need to raise. Everybody's raising prices this year. We need to raise them. You know, it'll happen in time, but we just decided this year it's really about just keeping everybody happy.
Right. That's sweet and very refreshing to hear, you know, your prices are too low. That's not something that you probably criticism you hear very often nowadays for most folks. So.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me. Three generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? We have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Over 70 years ago, a seed was planted in the rich, fertile soil of North Canby. The seed was Swan Island dahlias, and today it has blossomed and grown into the largest leading dahlia grower on planet Earth. Family owned and operated, Swan Island is one of Oregon's premier agrotourism destinations, boasting 375 varieties and 40 acres of gorgeous blooms. A sea of color that is among the most jaw-dropping and unforgettable sights in the entire Pacific Northwest. While their fields and annual Dahlia Festival justifiably get a lot of attention, Swan Island has a lot of amenities you may not know about. Their selection of gifts, gardening supplies, and other unique finds is among the most expansive in Canby area, and their fresh-cut flower shop, it's always worth stopping for. This summer, Swan Island is featuring a rotating menu of delicious food trucks Thursday through Sunday and a wide variety of fun classes for all interests and ability levels. The Dahlia Farm will also be hosting a local farmers market every Friday and live music shows through September. Swan Island and their amazing dahlia fields are open 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., closed Wednesdays. For class registration, concert schedule, or more information, visit dahlias.com or follow Swan Island Dahlias on Facebook and Instagram.
We're here seeing the Dahlia Farm as it is, this amazing place. We've kind of alluded to a little bit, Nick, but I'd love to hear a little bit just about the history of the place and how this kind of came to be a Dahlia Farm. I mean, people think of farms, you know, dahlias probably aren't the first thing they come, oh, that's a good business to get into or whatnot. So how did that all come to be?
Well, the farm started on Swan Island in 1927.
In Portland.
Yeah. That's where the name came from, and probably should have changed names when they moved it to Canby, but
right.
The original owners moved it out to Canby in the late 40s. And actually some of the first fields they had were, oh, I don't know, basically up where Knightsbridge Road is,
yeah.
And they moved their way out as the town built more houses. They kept moving until in the early 50s, maybe 53, 54, they bought the original 20 acres out here rather than using rented land, so they bought out here. And then.
And it was a Dahlia farm then, or was it more multi-purpose?
It was actually a vegetable farm before they bought it.
Gotcha.
It was a, you know, carrots, potatoes, I don't know, actually that's where our huge cellar is created for it to store the vegetables
makes sense.
Down there.
Yeah.
Dirt floor and cement walls.
So anyway, so they had it out here in the 50s, and then my parents, who were actually dairy farmers in northern, north of Bellingham, Washington.
Okay.
And my dad started growing dahlias as a hobby, and then pretty soon the hobby grew to where he had 1,000 plants and a couple thousand plants, and so they put up a sign and sold dahlias on the side just as a hobby business. And when the McCarter family, who originally had this, decided to sell, none of their children or kids wanted to carry on, so they just kind of secretly toured other little dahlia growers to see if they tested their knowledge to see if they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And then after that, when the big McCarter family, big wigs of Dahlia World, came to visit, they were just, mom and dad were just on cloud nine because they got to meet these people. And then
Dahlia celebrity.
They had dinner with them, and a couple weeks later they got a letter, you know, we really want to retire. Would you guys be interested in buying the Dahlia Farm? So of course my dad said, wow, I don't have to milk cows twice a day. I can do what I love, raising flowers and things. So they basically packed all us kids up, moved down here in the middle of summer, and it happened very quickly. And actually turned the dairy farm over to my uncle for a little bit till they ended up selling it. But so we came down and became dahlia growers, and I was 12 at the time, and I weeded and worked in the fields and moved irrigation, and then, you know, and dug dahlias and things through high school, and then went off to college, and then I ended up, like I said, coming back.
Yeah.
And they had another grower actually retire, same scenario where the kids didn't want to do it anymore. And so we actually kind of doubled the size of the business, so my brother and I came back and went into the business in 1975.
Very cool.
And I've been here ever since.
And now the dahlia is like the symbol of Canby. This is very exciting. That city's just embraced. Very cool. But you say you kind of hear from people that there's even still people, maybe newer people to Canby, or even older people that don't realize this is out here. Or maybe they just knew but like never actually came to visit, or just, oh,
they
I know where
about,
it is.
I know it's out there, but I've never come. You know, I've lived in Oregon City, or I lived in Canby, and I've never been out there. I know it's out there, but oh my gosh, why haven't I ever been here?
Or most of the people that we used to deal with all the time was, we put on the indoor festival we talked about, and yet you go visit with somebody and they would say, oh yeah, I don't come to the festival, I see them all the time.
Right.
And we're going, have you seen the inside show?
Yeah.
What inside show?
Right.
I just drive by it all the time.
Before I was like that before I first came out here, I think, to do a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I had just seen, I guess, I think it's one of your fields, the very end of one of your fields that you can see from North Holly Street.
Right.
You just assume that's the farm.
That's what we have.
Because you do have one sign there,
right.
Pointing down this road or whatnot. So you think, oh, that's Swan Island. But it's very different seeing it from this side and kind of surrounded by this sea of colors.
We did have a really complaint last year, or maybe a Google, remember the person said, well, I drove out there and it wasn't very impressive. We were thinking she probably saw Holly and went
and
home.
Turned around,
Because
that's so funny. Yeah,
funny.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they should have to be able to like prove that they actually
came
to be able to do that. Do like that.
You mentioned your dad raised dahlias as a hobby originally. I know you obviously do this professionally, but you cultivate and kind of compete as well. There is actually at least one other man in Canby that raises dahlias and has won awards and whatnot. I guess some folks kind of think of flowers as maybe a woman's game or whatnot, but dahlias particularly seem to attract a lot of men. I guess,
yeah.
Why?
And it's funny if a man gets hooked, maybe it's competitive and a real, I mean, they just, that's their world. Of taking care of, and Alan Manuel, who, I think he's won the Daryl Hart 4 years in a row, and I've won the Daryl Hart last 3 years,
which is
award giving for the best dahlia for its size across the nation. But
pitch that to ESPN sometime this
time. Yeah, a little battle.
Well, it's kind of amazing, though, when you think about, there's, I'll say maybe eight or nine Daryl Hart Awards given every year. And for us to, in Canby, two of them were awarded, one to me and one to Alan, here in
4 years running.
Yeah, so.
It's pretty amazing.
It is. And Alan's kind of, I would say, I don't want to call him a newbie, but he's been doing this for maybe 6 or 8 years of hybridizing, and he's really, really doing well.
Yeah.
You know, I have the luxury of being able to plant thousands and thousands of seeds because we have a lot of space. A lot of people aren't able to do more than 100 plants or so. So I have a huge amount to select from. But, anyway.
It's quite a process.
It gets to be fun for me because I went out yesterday and there's maybe 10 blooms or so on the seedlings, but I have like 10,000 plants out there. And later on in the season, it's like you go out every other day or walk down the road. What am I going to find? What am I going to find?
Yeah.
Grandpa used to say it was like Christmas every day.
Okay.
Because all these new babies were blooming and you don't know what you're going to get because it's something new. It's nothing you've seen before. It might have similarities, but it'll be all new. And so. Now he gets to enjoy it and see it. So yesterday he brought in an absolutely stunning kind of pinky purple and white. And I went, yes, I love it. And he's like, it's only in the second year. Yeah. And it takes us to 5 years before we can introduce it.
Okay, to make sure it's stable.
We have enough product
build up.
It stays.
And for us too, it's being the size of business we are, we need to be able to sell 300, 400, 500 the first year, where a lot of little hobbyists that do that, they'll sell 20 plants the next year, but we have to get a huge amount before I can even show it to somebody because you have to have a little bit of supply.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. That
makes sense. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about the dahlia that appeals to men maybe more than your roses or your tulips?
I say size.
Yeah.
I think the variation is size.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're very sort of like to a math mind, I think. They're sort of like geometrically interesting like a sunflower, it's very simple, at least in terms of just its overall shape and whatnot. So.
For most people, I think it's the longevity of their season.
Okay.
From August through September into October. But for the hybridizer or hobbyist that's just really into them, I don't know. I think there's so many guys that, I get to take a dozen to church every Sunday, or I take them to my at work. They bring them in and they're so proud of that flower.
Yeah.
Because a dahlia, especially when you get into the bigger blooms, the people that don't know dahlias are shocked when they see them.
Yeah.
And go, what is this? So even though it's become more and more popular, I think the dahlia is not quite as looked past as it used to be in the past. It wasn't respected as a cut flower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was like everybody, those are funeral flowers. They die in 1 or 2 days. You can't. And I don't know. I think we've done a really good job of creating or hybridizing, bringing in ones that last long, that have good stems.
Yeah.
And promoting how to treat cut flowers with hot water treatment and things. So we get
5 to 7 days or so out of them. So I think it's really, really helped a lot, because I know when we first started cut flowers, people all thought they were just a funeral flower.
Yeah. And even still, the dahlia kind of flies under the radar
a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have the prominence of some of your other flowers, like roses.
Roses and tulips and things. Yeah.
They're the stars.
Some people don't even know what a dahlia is.
And
what is a dahlia? Well, it can be 1 inch or 1.5 inches across. It can be 14 inches across. There's such a variation.
Yeah.
that I think people are shocked. Yeah. Like, why is this a dahlia? Why is that a dahlia?
Right. Yeah, they can look like they're not even the same type of flower. Right.
I was just at a dealership buying a new quad for the farm a week ago, and I had two men, financial guys and whatever, working, and they kept saying, what do you do? I raise dahlias. Yeah. And really, what is a dahlia? I own flowers? Oh, okay. So I got through working with these two people, and I go to the final paperwork, and this young lady comes to help me and says, I'm from Canby. I am so proud to be selling you a vehicle to the dahlia farm. You know, I've been there. I went to Canby High School. I know the dahlia farm. This is amazing. And that's why it was so funny.
Always nice to meet a fan.
We love fans.
Yeah. Okay, well, the farm, Swan Island Dahlias, is open now daily except for Wednesdays.
Right.
Nine to five thirty. Thank you.
So 2 months.
Yeah. Check dahlias.com for events going on. There's a gift shop, cut flower shop, obviously the fields, the test garden, which we didn't even talk about, which is amazing to always stop by and check that out. Cool.
Come see us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you guys so much for taking time out. Anything else that you'd like to share before we go?
No. Just say like Heather said, come see us.
Yeah. Come see us. It's free. It's free admission, free parking. Come enjoy.
Right. Bring your fanciest license plate so they can all have a giggle. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.